Hey everyone, welcome to Heroes of IT, a Tab Geeks Network show. Fans of this show will know that it was formerly called the Supporting IT Support Podcast. We have graduated and upgraded this to a video show, which is still available on all of the podcast platforms, but also is now available on YouTube in the video format. Spotify also has availability for videos, so if you're a bigger fan of Spotify than you are of YouTube, feel free to go ahead and watch the video over there. As most of you probably already know, my name is Jesse Nolan. I am your host, and I am the founder of Tab Geeks. So this is the second show that we're doing on video. So if you haven't checked out the YouTube channel yet, please go ahead and do it. It's just Tab Geeks, T-A-B-G-E-E-K-S, or you can just go to our website, tabgeeks.com/YouTube, and you can watch the show and enjoy the episode instead of just listening to it. But again, it's still available on all of the major channels for podcasts if you would like to listen to it. My guest today is BJ Beer. I hope I'm not butchering your last name. I was debating before the show which way to pronounce it. He's the CIO of the Guardian Savings Bank and a longtime member of Tab Geeks. BJ, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So how do you pronounce your last name?
It is Beyer.
Beyer. Ah, so close. See, when I sent you the invite, I was missing an E, and that carried over into my show notes here that I don't have that there. All right, Beyer.
Like whenever anybody asks me, how do you spell that? I just say it's beer with an I in the middle.
There you go.
It's I'll drink to that.
Beyer. Okay, BJ Beyer. Why don't you give us a minute or two intro about yourself?
So I've been in IT for about 18 years now, working for Union Guard and Union Savings and Guardian Savings. They're sister companies for going on 20 years now. Got into IT when I was very young, and I'm a technology geek. I love everything IT. I have a plethora of Raspberry Pis spread across my desk,
nice.
Desktops and servers floating around the house, smart home, you know, stuff. And if it's electronic, I love to play with it.
One of us.
Exactly.
Yeah, I totally get that, having started out as a kid in IT and just being continuously like a kid in a candy store. Anytime I get a new gadget or something to play with, I was messing around with the LED lights that I have here before, and you know, getting things like that is always exciting. And then my kids are always like, what's this do? And I'm like, well, it's a long story. But anyway, enough about me. Let's go back to the beginning. This is my favorite part of the show. No story is the same. How did you get into IT?
So I've been into electronics and computers since I was in kindergarten. Just always had, an interest in them, you know, taking apart old electronics, coffee pots and stereos just to see what they look like on the inside. Oddly enough, I actually used to work on cleaning VCRs, for people in the neighborhood. Walked around door to door, knocked on the door and said, you know, would you like me to clean your VCR? And they'd unhook it, send me home with it. I'd clean it up, tune it up, take it back. And a couple of times my parents would come home and there'd be a stack of, you know, VCRs sitting on the front steps with a note of who it was. And you know, they'd like to have it cleaned and tuned up. But yeah, I've played on computers for years, you know, old Commodore 64s and all the way up to what we're at now, which every day it's something new. We're on Windows 25, something like that.
Feels
they,
like
they
it.
They keep adding numbers, you know. Windows 10 will be the last Windows ever, except they release Windows 11. But yeah.
Well, everybody knows that Microsoft can't count.
Well, there is that.
So when you were lugging around VCRs and cleaning them for people, two questions. One, did people know that they needed to be cleaned, or did you have to explain it to them? And two, was this a business that you started?
I mean, I got paid, you know, a couple bucks here and there. And, you know, I walked around and said, you know, is your VCR, is it when you play movies, does it look kind of fuzzy? And, you know, because I can clean that for you. And really all I did was just take one of the VCR cleaning tapes and run it through. A couple of times I'd actually have to open it up with, you know, an alcohol swab and clean the head, but you know, nothing major. Nobody else knew how to do that. So
yeah, absolutely.
That's what I did. And I mean, a little entrepreneur from there. But yeah, I've worked on friends and family's computers, helped set up home networks and different things. So that's, I actually did have a small side business for a very short period, when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my career. Started Cincy Tech Services, again, one of the Google Workspace freebies. Started that up and I actually let that one go. I closed the account because I didn't use it anymore. But yeah, I just, you know, was charging way less than Best Buy's Geek Squad.
Nice.
And half the time I would actually come out to your house and, you know, I could set up a remote connection and, you know, tune up your PC if you needed it. So it was fun.
Awesome.
Every time I'd work on somebody's computer, I'd always learn something new.
That's the best thing about being in IT is there's always something more to learn.
Absolutely.
So did you go to school for IT? I mean, it sounds like you started this at a very young age. Take us through what happened after that.
Yeah. So I knew my interest was in computers. So high school, I actually helped the website administrator. After classes, I would go and image computers with Norton Ghost. So kind of,
good times.
Yeah, that brings back memories.
Oh yeah. But
I would go in after, after class and work on the computers, as, you know, kind of a free learning experience. I wasn't paid staff or anything. Mm-hmm. Did that in high school, and every time I would, you know, mess with a computer, I always learned something. So I figured, why not try going to school for it? So when I went to college, I went for a year, and just that really wasn't for me. So I came back and actually started working at Union Savings. Started as a processor, went to servicing, and they started an internal IT department. And from there, I've kind of worked my way up the ranks.
Very nice. Now, if I remember correctly from some of the other things I've seen written about you, you have a family member, I think, that works at the bank as well.
Yep. So my dad has worked there for 25 years at Union.
Nice.
He drove a truck for 20 years and on a whim changed careers. Became a loan officer. He's oversees a couple of officers now, kind of handles the maintenance, oversees the maintenance crew there as well. But yeah, he's been there 25 years. Between the two banks, I've been there 20.
And wow.
He, you know, brought me in and wanted to show me what he started doing. And that's when they realized that I had some IT talent, and mm-hmm. they were starting the IT department and said, you know, would you like to at least help us out a little bit? And I said, sure. So when they started up the department, I was one of the first few members.
And had you had any actual IT training at that point?
Like I said, I had a year of college under my belt, and mm-hmm. that was about it. Everything else has all been self-taught. Watching YouTube videos, you know, going online, doing research, crashing my own computers and figuring out how to fix it. Cause that would happen a lot. But I did end up going back to, Cincinnati State Technical College, and finish that, to at least get a degree. Mm-hmm. PC support and administration. So it was something to just kind of put on my wall, you know, I have a credential to show that I did, you know, go to school and complete something. but again, most of what I've learned has been on the job, you know, hands-on experience, learning from my failures, you know, like I said, crashing a system, you learn what you did wrong and
yep.
correct it.
Would you say going back and actually getting that piece of paper has been helpful to you?
I'm not going to say it hasn't. I mean, it's like anything else. It shows that I have, you know, the focus, you know, the ability to at least learn certain things. And it was more than just IT classes that I took. So it was, you know, helpful. But I still think, you know, the best way to learn is hands-on, you know, do it yourself or have somebody show you how to do it through a YouTube video or, you know, read an article. I've learned so much just doing that.
Oh, absolutely. And I agree 100%. I actually didn't fully graduate high school. I got a GED and said, screw this, and went into running my own IT business and fixing computers for locals. And, you know, I was doing that all throughout high school anyway. So I figured, what the hell, I'll just go and do it. And that has always been kind of one of my questions is, well, if I had actually gone through, finished properly and gone to college, would that have changed my career trajectory or what I'm doing? I mean, I feel that I've done out pretty well for myself regardless, but it's always been kind of a curiosity. It's like, what if?
So I mean, when I hire people, I look at their credentials. I look at, you know, if they went to school and what they, you know, learned. But, you know, that's not going to, in my eyes, it's not going to make or break somebody that I hire. I hire the person. I hire their personality. The tech stuff can be taught and learned. So, you know, yes, a degree is good. It's helpful. But some people have those book smarts, but they don't have real world smarts, right?
Right.
They don't have the knowledge to, if you hand them a machine and say, okay, do something with this, they may not be able to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I certainly hired people like that. And it was just like, what? Wait a minute. How did we go wrong here? Yeah, oh, absolutely. No, you can't bet 1,000 all the time, right?
Right.
All right. So you started working in IT, and then how was it just your continued learning from on the job, or did you have a mentor? Was it going back and getting that degree that gave you more background knowledge that helped you get ahead, or what led you through all the way up to the CIO role, which I want to hear more about in a bit?
Yeah. So, I mean, working at the bank, I, you know, was with a couple other technicians, and we managed somewhere in the neighborhood of like 30 branches, 600-ish employees, and we handled everything. I mean, we were kind of the jack of all trades, right? We would do printers, we would do phone systems, we would do you know, server setup, network maintenance, password resets, you know, new user training, you know, walking them through orientation, things like that. And we would continue expanding our own knowledge and bringing more things in-house that were outsourced to other vendors or other companies. So a lot of what I learned was on the job, and the people that I worked with, you know, I learned a lot from them as well. Richard Sweet is the CIO for Union Savings, and he taught me a lot. Chris Bales, who's the network administrator, I worked with him for, you know, the better part of 18 years. 12 of those were at Union, and I learned a lot of he's my go-to for networking. Networking is not exactly my strong suit. I get it. I understand it, but he's the one I go to when I've got networking questions. So, I mean, I still, you know, lean on other people. I don't know everything as much as I'd like to think I do.
Don't we all, right?
Exactly.
So let's go into that a little bit more. As a CIO, I haven't interviewed too many CIOs here on the show, and I'm always curious what a title means, right? So take us through, I guess, your day-to-day and what you handle, what you're responsible for, and yeah, what are the things that you like to hand off to other people who can handle them better than you?
So Guardian is, you know, not a big company. You know, we're small, we're locally owned. We've got 12 branches in Cincinnati, a couple in Northern Kentucky, and some down in Lexington.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got 200 employees. I manage a team of four technicians, sysadmin, and help desk. And then my day to day is, meetings, working on strategic initiatives. We're getting ready to go through a big project that I really can't talk about too many details right now. There's a lot going on with that, and that takes up a lot of my time right now. But I'm being a small company, I'm still kind of hands-on. I still do some of the stuff with the servers and networking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like you said, a title doesn't sit the same at every different company.
Right.
A lot of CIOs would be, strictly overseeing the IT department and managing the team and the infrastructure, but not actually doing hands-on work. I still have a lot of control. I still have a lot of access and hands-on work.
Mm-hmm.
Partially because I can't bring myself to give it up. that's what I like to do. But I'm learning a lot of the strategic part of it. The management piece, writing policies, procedures, and doing more of that.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love about tech at small to mid-sized companies is that you always have your hands in pretty much everything that's going on, and it's to the point where you can be, right? It's a little bit overwhelming at times, depending on how hard and fast they're driving the initiatives. I've certainly had times where I've just been like, all right, everybody has to just slow down, let me finish this, then we can get back into whatever comes next after the fact. But to be able to be hands-on and to still have, I guess, your hands in all of the pies that are going on and things like that, that I've always found is both invigorating and helpful for me as a leader to be able to prioritize across things and really interconnect all the systems and understand across the board what's going on, as opposed to just one single focus like at Google, your desktop support, that's all you do.
Yep. The old adage, jack of all trades, master of none.
Not so anymore.
I have my hands in a lot of stuff. I know a lot. But I keep adding more things to my tool belt, One of the things I've recently in the last few years started doing is I'm really hard into Linux now.
Nice.
Used to be strictly Windows. I actually have some Linux machines at home. I'm, playing with Raspberry Pis, running, home network applications. There's a lot of cool stuff I've learned just in the last few years. Definitely beefing up my command line strategies, tactics.
Your hacker protocols.
Yeah. I'm going to go for that white hat here next, right?
Oh, there you go. Well, I joke that every time anybody sees somebody doing command line on Linux or otherwise, but usually on Linux, it's like, oh, what are you hacking? It's like, I'm just doing a ping test.
It's not like the old 80s movie Hackers. It does not look like
right.
that.
Nope.
It's not nearly as fun. It's text and a prompt, and that's it.
Yep.
Nothing fancy.
Yeah. Well, I actually have a whole book here, Range, dedicated to debunking that term, jack of all trades, master of none. He argues that essentially, on the contrary, it's those who are experienced in lots of different areas are able to pull inspiration from all of those areas, and they will actually excel far further than those who are specialists. It'll just take a bit longer. And he talks about, I forget the specific examples because it's been probably 3 years since I read it. Time to go and reread it. But talks about like Tiger Woods versus some of the other, non-hardcore specialists, or maybe it was the opposite, that he was varied. I don't remember. I got to reread it. But essentially, I'm going in circles. Essentially here, the more you go out and learn and experience new things, the more you're going to be able to pull in as inspiration. And usually that will end up giving you the breakthrough that you need in order to figure out the situation, as opposed to somebody who is just hyper-specialized and only looking at, that specific thing that they need.
Hmm. I'm going to have to go read that. I'll have to get that the title from you.
It's David Epstein, Range by David Epstein. I want to take a really quick break to tell you about our sponsor for this episode. It is Riverside.fm. It also happens to be the platform that we're recording this on. I'm a big fan of Riverside. I've tweeted about them. I've talked about them in past episodes. We did a live episode with them over on our Google Workspace Recap podcast talking about some of the new things that were coming and some of the decisions that Google made. And we got a ton of people over on YouTube, and it was totally effortless to do the live show on Riverside. So that's one of their amazing features. Basically, Riverside is a very high-quality online studio for recording podcasts and shows, and it just blows Zoom and Google Meet out of the water. So if you're on either of those platforms, definitely go check out Riverside.fm. I switched to Riverside after I was looking to bring my shows to video format. I've been doing just audio for just over 2 years, and I decided, hey, let's upgrade and let's go for the YouTube audience and start expanding and growing in that direction. And honestly, they are the simplest, easy-to-use platform out there. I can record in 4K, which was a requirement for me. Also, it's really simple for me to send an invite link to my guests, and they're able to just click it, and it opens in their browser just like a Google Meet meeting, and right away they can join in and start recording the show. Easy peasy. They're also killing it at developing new features. I love all the things they're coming out with. I'm not the only one that's using it. There's lots of great creators out there that are using it. Two of my favorites are Guy Raz from my favorite podcast, How I Built This with Guy Raz at NPR, and my favorite YouTuber, MKBHD, who you've heard me talk about a lot on this show, and they both are using it. And honestly, I thought both of them were recording locally in the studio. I didn't think it was done virtually, so absolutely sound fantastic. Go and check it out. Riverside.fm, not .com, .fm, Riverside.fm, create an account, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Now, back to the show. All right, so let's go back into your day-to-day as a CIO. You still have your hands in a lot of pies. You work for a bank. Obviously, you can't tell us too many different details. Are you in meetings all day? Are you working on difficult projects? Are you working with your team, co-working? What's it look like for you?
It's a lot of meetings. We usually do have a lot of internal meetings, steering committee, board meetings, project meetings, and then, internal in the department, we try to keep each other up to date on what's going on. Writing policies, procedures, or updating what we've got, because everything changes day to day, especially if we're implementing new applications, new software, changing the network layout for anything. We got to go back and update all that documentation. So that's a lot of what I do as well, is work on keeping all that up to date. Meetings, mm-hmm. meetings.
All day long. Yep. Are you virtual or are you on? Oh yeah. Are you virtual or on site?
I work on site, and our headquarters is kind of interesting. It's split between two different buildings, on the northern side of Cincinnati and then the western side. Mm-hmm. It's just the way that, I think like 10 years ago before I came to Guardian, it's where they had split the, main branch and moved a lot of the corporate up to the Westchester area and hadn't moved the IT and servicing functions. So mm-hmm. like my CFO, the president, HR, they're all at the Westchester location. And then my location is mostly IT and servicing. So if I need to talk to any of the executives, it's either a phone call or I actually kind of drive past there because I drive all the way from one side of Cincinnati to the other to get to my my office. So I actually go past that that other office. So sometimes I'll stop in, I'll work there a couple days a week. But we've always been in office. Again, being a small company, locally based, it's a little bit easier to do in office. But we do still a lot of virtual meetings, Microsoft Teams, Zoom, especially working with vendors. Like I said, I've got 3 or 4 projects going on right now that's all we do is virtual meetings for that.
Right. How much would you say that the pandemic has changed the way that you work, especially in IT?
Not much. Our bank is not on the technology forefront. Mm-hmm. We are small. Our big thing is, you know, we're a hometown bank. You know, I don't know if you have a bank in your area that you go into and you know the people that are there, if you go to a bank or if
not
all
really.
Your stuff's online. A lot of, you know, the younger generation, everything is, you know, Apple Pay and Google Pay. You use credit cards, PayPal, yep. Venmo, Zelle. You don't have to go into a branch to do anything. It's all online. We still do a lot. I mean, we have brick and mortar shops, and our customers come in. Our customer service staff knows them by first name, and
nice.
They've been longtime customers. And that's what we pride ourselves on, is being that hometown friendly bank.
You know, right.
Call a phone number and get an automated response, or a million different prompts to get through to somebody.
Interesting. Would you say that the, I guess the staff of the bank, do they tend to be towards the, I'm trying to figure out the best way to say this, the low tech side of the scale, like I found in real estate?
I mean, again, we're not cutting edge, but we, you know, most
but
of
you're
our
doing
staff
Zoom meetings least, and whatnot.
Yeah, they at least know how to do some basics. You know, we try to keep them up to date whenever we can. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, not being cutting edge, but we still have computers. We still have, you know, printers and scanners, and we do Zoom meetings. So, you know, we're up there. We're not using the rotary dial phone.
Might be more secure than some of today's systems. Who knows?
You know, the old fax lines. My CFO hates faxes, so he'll love it when I say that.
I hate faxes.
Make that sound like when you used to have dial-up.
Yep. Killing a robot. Yep. Mm-hmm. Just to send little bits and packets of data. Very slowly, mind you.
Very
Especially
slowly.
With faxing. Never mind dial-up, but faxing. Ooh. Yeah, we actually were just getting rid of some of our fax machines. I went out to put internet at one of our smaller offices because we have a lot of apartment complexes, and so we're starting to bring the more further out and smaller of those locations into the modern era. And I walked in there, and there was no phone, there was no computer, there was no Wi-Fi, there was a fax machine. I was just like, okay, you don't need this anymore. End of an era, I suppose.
Yeah, they're going away slowly.
Not slow enough for my taste.
Medical field and probably banking are one of the last two that are hanging on to them.
Yeah. Well, there's the whole wet signature versus digital signature argument, and I'm going, a fax is not a wet signature, people. It's as much of a wet signature as an email is.
Right.
Apparently they don't agree with me.
It's more the image than anything.
Yeah, right. Well, you get a better image with even an email fax or a PDF of the, you know, wet signature, so to speak.
Yeah.
They'll get there. I've had a lot of challenges. Honestly, it feels like pulling teeth sometimes when I'm doing in real estate, just trying to get them to understand what's a chrome, you know, well, you know, the little circle thing. Oh, the E? No, not the E. Try again. That's just the tip of the iceberg. So I imagine that goes into the banking side as well.
Yeah. I mean, you've got your larger banks that, you know, they may have a little bit more tech invested, but you know, that's just not what we're about,
mm-hmm.
which is hard for me because I love tech.
Right. So when you're looking for, you know, new tech that you guys are going to deploy, is it something that comes in from like regulations that you have to respond to, or are you, you know, you mentioned that you have a couple of big projects that are going on there. Is that just modernizing infrastructure or in response to some of the other things that are going on, like the pandemic?
Yeah, it's a lot of necessity. Old systems that need to be sunset, so you mm-hmm. replace them with newer versions. You know, we do at some point have to implement certain things due to regulations or because the landscape is just changing and you need it. You know, but we don't go out and look for, oh, look, you know, AI, let's figure out how we can work that into, to our banking infrastructure.
Right.
That's not something we're going to. So
let the other ones figure it out first.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of how we do things in the real estate industry. Also, we try to be a little bit ahead of some of the others, but honestly, doing that in the real estate industry is not difficult given that most people are very low tech to begin with.
Right. I mean, I remember listening to the supporting IT that you had with Dr. Eric Cole, and he talked about, was it the nuclear plants that they are 7 and 8 years behind, and they're air gapped. So, but it's because of stability.
Right.
Which makes a lot of sense. So.
Yeah, for sure. Just don't let them get on a active network connection.
Yeah, that can go bad.
Swiss cheese over there. Yeah, you got to wonder about all of that, to be honest. All right, so let's move away from the bank. I want to hear more about you. And you mentioned a bunch of Raspberry Pis at the beginning. What are you working on?
So I've got a couple sitting here that I'm just kind of playing with. They're all running Ubuntu. Again, beefing up my command line practice. They run anything from Docker. I'm learning, the containers and how that kind of works together. What else is on there? Pi-hole, which is the ad blocking. So, which yep. is good, but it's also bad when it blocks things that you need to work. so I'm very careful because the hard part is anything I do on my home network, I got to make sure I don't break for the rest of the family.
Yeah. Because
when it doesn't work, they get upset.
Oh, for sure.
But yeah, I've got, 3 or 4 of them just sitting here. Plex is a big one. I've got a huge movie library. I've taken all my DVDs.
And you're running Plex off a Pi?
Off a Raspberry Pi.
Wow.
It doesn't need much processing power.
You're not transcoding then. You're just hosting the direct files. Interesting.
Yep. And I'm actually hosting the files on a separate storage device. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of the pass-through.
Right. So interesting.
Gigabit network between them, and they pull the file. And now again, there's only one person watching one movie at a time.
Right.
It's not 5 different people within the house streaming, different things, people outside the house streaming different things. It's very low key, minimal. And it's kind of our go-to if there's nothing on Netflix or Disney Plus or Amazon Prime.
Impossible. There's always something.
Or if it ever goes down, when the apocalypse comes, I'll have, my own Netflix.
Yep, absolutely. Actually, that's when I started setting my Plex back up. I had taken it down and hadn't been using it for quite a while because I was switching around computers and whatnot. And then when Google and Netflix talked about throttling the internet at the beginning of the pandemic, I was like, excuse me? And so I grabbed a Mac Mini that I had.
Throttle the internet.
The entire internet. Yeah. Certainly, entertainment stuff. And so I was like, shit, now I got to get my Plex back up and running, dig up the old hard drives, jack them into a new system. And I had a Mac Mini that I had retired a little while ago that was laying around. And I mean, it's a i5 or I think it was an i7 actually from like 2015, but shit, that'll still run. I mean, you're running yours on a Raspberry Pi, so got that set up.
Of course, with the supply chain shortage, you can't find them anymore.
The Pis?
I actually just read an article. Yeah, I read an article that there was a developer who wrote some code and built a little mini website to try and track the 40 or 50 different Raspberry Pi models and where they're located if they're in stock, because you can't find them.
Graphics cards.
Micro Center, Micro Center's my mecca. And they, a couple of years ago, and that's what happens, I bought a couple to play with and they had them, just kind of sit on the shelves. Now they're like the graphics card when Bitcoin mining took off.
Sure.
People were lining up to find them and
you still can't find them.
And I think what really sparked it is because you can use them as a desktop. So we talked about you can't find furniture, right, for your studio. So everybody's working from home, making home offices. Well, this was their backup plan, the Raspberry Pi to run a desktop. So
a very lightweight desktop, but it'll work.
Well, I mean, it's, think of it as a thin client then.
You don't really need much.
You just connect to the web.
Yep. I wonder what the resale on those is worth. I got a couple of those laying around here. Anybody want to buy them? $100
Look on eBay, you find somebody gouging. That was the other thing they were talking about. There's just people selling them for 2, 3, 4 times what they're worth.
So. Well, they're only worth $25, give or take. Right? Well, they got a different lot of different models.
Yeah. They're fun to play with, though.
Oh, absolutely. I've played with them a lot over the years, but never really built anything, you know, solid. I did Pi-hole for a while and PFSense and some other stuff. Was it PFSense that runs on there? I think so.
Yeah, for the firewall router.
Yep. Yeah, just playing around with different stuff to kind of get my hands wet, and obviously playing with Linux and some of the hacking tools and the penetration testing tools and things like that. Went down that road for a little while. But coding has never really been my strong suit. One of these days I will like drop everything and just decide I'm going to learn to code now. But after all these years, 15 years in IT, and I still haven't really, I mean, I can here and there, I can copy, I can read, I can modify, but just sitting down and learning a language and coding, haven't done it yet.
At least just having the basics to understand the formatting and layout is almost essential.
You
know,
yeah.
Scripts, batch files, you know, PowerShell scripts, Bash scripts. You know, that's the big thing. Is I'm coming from a Windows background. You know, DOS command line, and going over to Linux, and there's a lot of similarities, but there's a lot of differences too. So trying to discern the differences and just keep expanding that.
Yep. Yeah, even when I jump in between Mac, PC, and Chrome OS, it's like, all right, how do I launch Terminal on this machine? All right, what's that? How does that command work on this one again? Try to remember all the different, you know, just quick Google it, figure it out. I'm not even doing much, just some network tools, ipconfig, like I said before, or pingdest, or I've got a ping running now because the connection wavered for a minute there, and I got really worried that I was going to lose the show recording here. It's just running.
That'd be bad.
Well, it would be bad. I mean, the software that we use for this, it does the, it records both locally and uploads to the cloud. So even if your internet wavers for a bit, it may not come through to my side 100%, but when I download the recordings at the end, it'll be as if nothing ever happened. Because when your internet connection is restored, I'll just finish uploading the rest of it. So, and that was practically an ad for Riverside. So they got a freebie there.
There you go.
Yep. I am talking to them about sponsorships, so stay tuned. Hear more about Riverside. It's always fun. All right, so we talked about your career, we talked about what you do, your title, and how you got there. What are some of the biggest challenges that that you've faced over the last couple of years, especially as we've worked our way through the pandemic?
The pandemic being one of them. What hasn't it affected? Again, not being a remote company, we're in office. We're still very paper based. You know, we're mostly mortgage loans.
Yeah.
So we do have a lot of paper. You can't do paper remotely. It's kind of a problem. So we had to work on spreading people out. You know, making sure we had enough space for people to work safely, put those kind of protocols in place. But we did, beef up. Again, we started using Zoom and Teams a lot more, having a lot more virtual meetings, doing things from different locations. My team actually split up for a while just to make sure that everybody was, safe, because a couple of them were in the same office. So, if one got sick, we didn't want the whole team to go down. But for the most part, it didn't affect us as much as I think a lot of other companies seem to have been hit. But again, we learned on that we can do some things remote that we didn't think we could do before. But the other challenges are cybersecurity.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I hear anymore. you know, the, you know, Casilla and SolarWinds, everybody is a target.
Supply chain hacks.
And it's it's always changing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, WordPress.
Oh, yeah. You
know, a website host. I just read that one of the Access Press is a theme. Mm-hmm. They were a supply chain hack.
And
they put a bunch of backdoors in the themes. So, you know, nothing is safe.
Nope. Nothing is safe. Nothing is sacred. And it's like, you can't host it yourself because you don't have, you know, tons of cybersecurity experts and the millions of dollars that it takes to pay them.
Right.
And so you put your trust in these other groups and, you know, they seem pretty safe and solid and have a good track record. And then whoops, all it takes is one.
Well, I mean, that's zero day is the biggest issue. Until you can figure out a way to, I don't want to say get rid of them because you're never going to get rid of them, but a better way to manage them, you're always going to be a step behind.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's just like anything else, the more security and protocols and controls you put in place, the more they're going to try and break through. So whatever you can put in place, they're going to break it. They're going to get eventually around it. They're going to get under it, over it, through it.
Well, it's like I said in the episode with Dr. Eric Cole, is either you don't know that you've been hacked yet, or I forgot it again. Either you've already been hacked and don't know it, or you're about to be, or something along those lines. It's like everybody's in that kind of pseudo position.
Exactly. I love
that one up.
Yeah. It's no fun. And then when you put regulations in place, it's even less fun.
Oh, for sure. Well, you could always go back to being 7 or 8 years behind with air gap computers like the nuclear silos and see how that works for you.
Sometimes that's what you got to do, right?
Yeah. What was it? It came out that at one point all of their passwords were 8 zeros.
I mean, who's going to guess that?
Right?
I mean, it's like the most common is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Yep. No, it's not that one. So it could be any of the billion possible different possibilities. It's 8 characters, pretty secure.
Yeah.
What they needed was a exclamation mark at the end of the zeros. That would have made it
exactly
real secure. Alrighty. Before we wrap up here, do you have any advice that you would give to somebody who's just getting started in their career? You went from cleaning VCRs all the way up to the top CIO seat at a bank. That's quite a spread, quite a career that you've had, and it doesn't look like you're done yet. What would you tell somebody who is trying to figure out, you know, what the hell do I do? Where do I start?
To start, just get in front of a computer and play with it. Mm-hmm. You know, tinker, you know, learn, break it, and figure out how to fix it. You know, I took computers apart, and put them back together with extra pieces, without extra pieces, you know, but
it's always that one screw.
The internet today, if you can't find the answer, then you're not looking hard enough. The answer, somebody's already come across it. And that is probably what has changed the most over the last few years is, yeah, you can do a quick Google search, but you got to dig through the results and know what you're looking for and use your own judgment on what will actually work or not. Because everybody's posting their solution. And that's the other difference, is every environment is different. So every solution is going to be different. But don't give up. Keep learning. You know, our buddy Kevin has got his training videos. So there's all sorts of free resources out there.
Yep, absolutely.
Just use it.
It's
don't be afraid to ask questions.
I have to link to his channel now. It's Kevin Apollinario. I'm going to have to ask him how he pronounces that. He's got like a career IT getting started. And he's just, he's also figuring it out as he goes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's KevTech.
The big thing. Yeah, it's, I think, his YouTube channel there. And You know, that's one of the things that drives me crazy when I'm looking for an answer and I do a Google search and it gives me a response, or the top five responses are from sites from 10 years ago. I'm like, I'm not searching about software from 10 years ago. I'm searching now.
So if you don't know this already, in Google search, there is the more. Okay.
Yep.
I've showed a few people that.
No, tell the whole trick. I want the audience to hear it.
So when you're searching, one of the options that comes up is you can choose more and actually narrow down your search by time frames. The last month, week, last 24 hours, last year, or a custom range. That has saved me scrolling through pages of, well, this is from 2012. Well, this software didn't even come out until 2015. So how is that possible? It's bit of time saver, if anything. So yes.
And that's a great trick for
your time frame.
Not just Google. It's also, if you're searching for conversation, you're looking for something on Twitter or in forums, there's usually some kind of a time frame modifier. And yeah, that's been a game changer. But still, every time I do a search, it's like, and I love Google, and I've been shitting on Google a little bit lately because of the whole, legacy G Suite shutdown account fiasco. I would pitch the event that we're having tomorrow, but by the time I post this episode, I'll have had the event and probably had another one. So just subscribe to the YouTube channel, and you'll be able to see when we do those live events. But, It's been a rough week or two for us old guard of Google fans, but you know, it's like, come on, it's Google. You're doing a search here about software, like you said, that wasn't around when this article was written. Why are you giving me these answers? You can do this better. Go do it better. But they'll get there.
Algorithm needs adjusted.
Yep. Always room for improvement, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Alrighty, that is excellent advice and a wonderful episode here. BJ, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. And folks, again, like I rambled on about in the beginning, if you haven't yet, go check out our YouTube channel. We're trying to get the last few subscribers there so that we can get the custom, whatever it's called, the custom URL, so that we can have youtube.com/tabgeeks, which will make it even easier for me to say how to get to the channel as opposed to just searching for it. You need 100 subscribers in order to get there. And I think we're like 4 or 5 away. So go ahead and check that out and subscribe and check out some of our other videos and shows. This has been great. Thank you again, BJ. And PJ is a member of our TabGeeks community as well, which is tabgeeks.com/Slack. You can sign up for that. It's an exclusive, free IT professionals only community. No marketers allowed, no assholery allowed. So go and check that out and check out our other shows and publications over at tabgeeks.com. Anyway, that's all for this show. And we hope you enjoyed it. Let us know what you think of the new format, either in the comments below if you're on YouTube, or you can send me an email. I'm just jesse@tabgeeks.com. Thanks. We'll see you next time on Heroes of IT. Still getting used to that new name.